Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to talk seriously and honestly about the greatest conflict in the history of this nation, World War II. Some 16 million Americans fought in that war. Many of them still with us. My dad served in the war. My father-in-law was a major in the U.S. Army in that conflict. So many others of us have close relatives who fought, some who died, some 300,000 who died in World War II. We owe it to them to be serious about confronting the myths, mistakes, and lies about World War II. That's the subject of this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. Some of those myths, mistakes, and lies about World War II involve what the Japanese intended by attacking us at Pearl Harbor on December 7th. They did not intend on destroying or even invading the United States. That would have been quite mad. Admiral Yamamoto had traveled extensively in the West before the war. He knew a great deal from his service in the hierarchy of the Japanese Navy. He knew a great deal about the West, and he warned the emperor and all of his colleagues about what a war against the West would look like. It would have been ultimately one that they couldn't win if there was going to be the kind of fight to the death that it later became. In fact, Admiral Nagano, who was the naval chief of staff, said, "If I am told to fight regardless of consequences, I shall run wild considerably for 6 months or a year. But I have utterly no confidence in the second or third years." They knew how much more powerful the United States was, but there was an assumption by some in the Japanese high command that the United States was indeed soft. That was something that not only the Japanese assumed, but it was something that their German allies assumed, because in September of 1940, before the attack on Pearl Harbor, Germany and Japan and Italy had entered into what was called the Tripartite Agreement, where they had agreed that if one of them went to war with a party that was then neutral, then the others would also go to war against that party. Which helps to explain one of the mysteries of World War II, which is, okay, the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor. How did that lead to war with Germany? Well, the answer is the Germans made the same kind of assumption the Japanese made, that America was soft and flabby and wouldn't fight. And Hitler, for all kinds of deep and weird psychological reasons, felt the need to keep his treaty with Japan, the Tripartite Agreement, and to declare war. Here is President Roosevelt on February of 1942, speaking just a couple of weeks after Pearl Harbor about the wrong assumptions of our enemies.
"Ever since this nation became the arsenal of democracy, ever since enactment of Lend-Lease, there has been one persistent theme through all Axis propaganda. This theme has been that Americans are admittedly rich, that Americans have considerable industrial power, but that Americans are soft and decadent, that they cannot and will not unite and work and fight. From Berlin, Rome, and Tokyo, we have been described as a nation of weaklings, playboys who would hire British soldiers or Russian soldiers or Chinese soldiers to do our fighting for us. Let them repeat that now. Let them tell that to General MacArthur and his men. Let them tell that to the sailors who today are hitting hard in the far waters of the Pacific. Let them tell that to the boys in the flying fortresses. Let them tell that to the Marines."
That's President Roosevelt speaking to the nation in a fireside chat on February 23rd, 1942. And that brings up another one of the myths about World War II. It's a very persistent myth, and it's a very pernicious myth. The myth that somehow we went to war in order to rescue Jews from the Holocaust. Now, of course, there are lots of anti-Semites who put forward that myth, who will say, oh, President Roosevelt had Jews all around him, and he wanted to go to war to help the Jews. Well, that doesn't explain the fact that the doors of America were largely closed to Jewish refugees, and when President Roosevelt was even begged to do so by some people who knew that the Holocaust was going on, he didn't bomb the rail lines leading into Auschwitz. He did nothing to either publicize or emphasize the Nazi atrocities, the Nazi mass murder of Jewish people. The idea that we went to war to rescue the Jews, I've heard people say that concerning justifying the war in Bosnia, saying, well, we went to war to save the Jews, we got to go to war to save the Bosnians, or people even using that to justify the war in Iraq. I'm all for the war in Iraq, but you don't justify it that way by saying, well, Saddam Hussein was killing his own people, we went to World War II to rescue Jews from German killing. That wasn't at all the purpose of the war. As a matter of fact, it's very important that people know that President Roosevelt deliberately, when he asked for a declaration of war against Japan after Pearl Harbor, did not ask for a declaration of war against Germany. Now, he was close to Churchill. He knew that sooner or later, war against Germany would be inevitable. But for 4 days, the White House waited nervously while trying to mobilize America to see what Hitler would do. Hitler had been committed, according to treaty, to go to war against the United States after Japan attacked us, and Japan, meanwhile, was attacking the Philippines simultaneously, attacking the British fortress in Singapore, and attacking the British interests in Asia, and moving very aggressively and very brilliantly and amazingly well-planned military assault. But Hitler finally spoke and broke his silence on December 11th. He spoke before the Reichstag, which was assembled at the Kroll Opera House in Berlin. Remember, the Reichstag building had been burned down. And he began by denouncing Roosevelt. He denounced that man who, while our soldiers are fighting in snow and ice, very tactfully likes to make his chats from the fireside. And people laughed. The man who is the main culprit of this war. I will pass over the insulting attacks made by this so-called president against me, said the Fuhrer. That he calls me a gangster is uninteresting. After all, this expression was not coined in Europe, but in America, no doubt because such gangsters are lacking here. Apart from this, I cannot be insulted by Roosevelt, for I consider him mad, just as Wilson was. First he incites war, then falsifies the causes, then odiously wraps himself in a cloak of Christian hypocrisy, and slowly but surely leads mankind to war, not without calling God to witness the honesty of his attack in the approved manner of an old Freemason. Part of Hitler's ideology was that the Freemasons, and Roosevelt at one time had been a Mason, were aligned with world Jewry. He then goes on and says, a worldwide distance separates Roosevelt's ideas and my ideas. Roosevelt comes from a rich family and belongs to the class whose path is smooth in the democracies. I was only the child of a small poor family and had to fight my way by work and industry. In the Great War, Roosevelt had a pleasant job, while I had been an ordinary soldier. Roosevelt had remained in the upper 10,000, while I had returned from the war as poor as before. After the war, Roosevelt tried his hand at financial speculation while I lay in the hospital. As president, he had not brought the slightest improvement to his country, said Hitler. Strengthened by the Jews all around him, he turned to war as a way of diverting attention from his failures at home. The German nation wants only its rights, said Der Fuhrer. It will secure for itself this right, even if thousands of Churchills and Roosevelts conspire against it. I have therefore arranged for passports to be handed to the American Charge d'Affaires today, and the following. The rest of his words were drowned out by applause. They rose and chanted, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, and applauded the declaration of war by Nazi Germany on the United States of America. Hitler's determination to go to war, fateful, and welcomed in the United States with almost a sense of relief. But part of the problem was that we were in no shape to fight the war. And that brings us to another common myth, the myth that it was our political leadership, namely Franklin Roosevelt, and our military leadership, people like MacArthur and Eisenhower and Bradley, who really won the war. The war was actually won by Americans of a different stripe, not the military. And no, it wasn't won by our political leadership. We'll explain how it was won in this special broadcast, Myths mistakes and lies about World War II. To put it simply, materialism is the attempt to prove that human beings are merely meat in motion, and that we have no free will, that we have no souls, that morality and religion are simply evolutionary artifacts programmed by nature for survival, and that our very thoughts and ideas can be fully explained by our brain chemistry. Darwin's theory of evolution made scientific atheism credible by offering a scientific explanation on how human beings could be generated through a blind process of random variation and natural selection. At discovery.org/Medved, you can get a free mini book. Free! Darwin's Three Big Ideas That Impacted Humanity. It explores how three key concepts from Darwin undermine morality, religion, medicine, the criminal justice system, and the value of human life. Get your free book at discovery.org/Medved. That's discovery.org/Medved. Small investors shamed Wall Street by running the price of certain stocks way up to the detriment of big hedge funds, social media, and trading platforms, then kept investors from buying stock. A financial war is being waged in America. With all this volatility, now's an even better time to protect your net worth and own precious metals as part of your portfolio. Nick Rovich, who's the owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, has always been fair and honest with my precious metals holdings, and now, more than ever, it's a good time to own tangible assets like gold, silver, and platinum. AmFed can show you smart choices, which have been proven winners time and time again. Call Nick and his team at AmFed today, 800-221-7694. That's 800-221-7694, or visit AmericanFederal.com.
We know the global elites, the 1%, have hijacked and subverted the U.S. culture, economy, and government. The battle to take back America begins with the Rise USA, the Resurrection Tour. Thousands of patriots are on the march to Little Rock, Shreveport, and three stops in Texas, plus many other stops on the Arise USA Tour. 50 states, 84 stops, 111 days. The Arise USA Tour will unite the 99% of we the people that stand against the 1% globalist elites and their tyranny. The Arise USA Tour is free, with hundreds of speakers and freedom fighters, including Constitutional Sheriff Richard Mack, the Patriot Street Fighter Scott McKay, human rights attorney Lee Dundas, and many more. For tour info and a list of speakers, go to AriseUSA.com. Join the thousands that have donated over $1 million to Arise USA Tour. To donate or for the tour stop nearest you, go to AriseUSA.com. That's AriseUSA.com.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from AmeriCare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. AmeriCare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, AmeriCare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at ImmuneSupportNow.com. That's ImmuneSupportNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show is a very special broadcast about World War II. The truth about World War II, clearing up myths, mistakes, and lies. Now, one of those mistakes, it's not really so much a myth or a lie. One of those mistakes is the idea that it was American political leadership, particularly by Franklin Roosevelt, who, of course, was president in the whole pre-war period, then ran for a third term in 1940, right at the eve of war, and then guided us through the war until his death in the last stage of the war in April 1944. There's a mistake that says that, oh, it was Franklin Roosevelt who was such an inspiring war leader. He was an inspiring war leader. You heard some of the fireside chat that he gave. He could rally the nation. He had a terrific voice for radio, which everybody commented about. He was blessed with that. And certainly he was somebody who was a competent commander in chief once we got into the war. But Roosevelt's dithering and Roosevelt's inability and refusal to actually rearm America fully before the war, I think disqualifies him as one of the true heroes. Roosevelt was unlike Churchill, who saw the war coming and urged Britain to prepare for it. Roosevelt wasn't in that category at all. He had been an enthusiastic supporter of Munich. In fact, one of the statements by a Republican Congresswoman Claire Booth Luce, the wife of Henry Luce, was that Roosevelt was a bigger isolationist than Calvin Coolidge, that he actually wanted, if anything, to try to avoid the war. But once we got into the war, the real hero of the war was not even our military commanders, that we had outstanding commanders ranging from Douglas MacArthur to Dwight Eisenhower, probably the greatest of them for his organizational ability, to Chester Nimitz in the Navy, and so many great commanders. But the real heroes of the war, the ones who made the difference, were industrialists. Yeah, I know, you're not supposed to say that. Heads of big corporations. People like Henry J. Kaiser. Because America won the war based on our ability to produce armaments and to produce them in a huge, huge hurry. I mean, it's totally stunning that the United States was able to turn around its economy. We were just beginning to emerge from the Depression. It was really the rearming of America that began before we were even in the war that ended the Depression. But the statistics are stunning. Despite the fact that by 1943, we had 7 million men under arms, ultimately some 16 million served in the armed services for the U.S., despite the fact that we had 7 million men under arms, we had been able in our factories to build 296,000 planes, 102,000 tanks, and U.S. shipyards, most decisively at all, turned out 88,000 ships and landing craft. Now, this is just a stunning achievement. It's almost beyond imagination. And it's particularly decisive because it was done not by the Army, it was done not by the Navy, it was done, yes, with government money, Defense Department money at the time, Department of War money, the Defense Department came later, but it was done with Department of War money, but it was done by industrialists, people like Henry J. Kaiser, the great shipbuilder who created, I mean, so many new institutions on the West Coast. He built new shipyards in Los Angeles, in Houston, and Portland, Oregon. The first Liberty ship took 196 days to deliver. And then he cut the time to 27 days. By 1943, Kaiser was turning out a ship, a new ship, every 10.3 hours. And in a worldwide war involving millions and millions and millions of people, that was decisive, especially when compared to our main rivals. Germany and Japan were simply not able to keep up with the United States. Italy, forget about it. Germany and Japan were not able to keep up with the United States in terms of turning out some of this crucial war equipment. And this comes to another myth about the war. Not only a myth that de-emphasizes the heroes of industry, people who built up companies like Lockheed, like Boeing, that built all this aircraft, that built all the ships, that built all the arsenal of democracy, in Roosevelt's phrase, that made victory possible. But the fact is that Germany was simply not the wonder of efficiency or industrial might that many Americans assumed it to be. William L. O'Neill, who's a professor of history at Rutgers, writes in his Oxford Essential Guide to World War II, what I find to be an indispensable little book. He says, at the time, many Americans believed that the German state and economy were models of Teutonic precision and police state efficiency. But in fact, the Nazi state was a shambles, remarkable for its overlapping authorities and plagued by bureaucratic chaos. Now, how bad was it? Now, this is stunning. They created less ammunition throughout World War II than at the peak of World War One. Less ammunition. They had a huge problem. Albert Speer, Hitler's favorite architect, was put in charge of munitions and reworking the German economy and producing all of this stuff. He was put in charge after the death of the armaments and war productions minister, Fritz Todt. And Speer just ran into frustration after frustration. You know what much of that frustration focused on? Was Hitler's refusal to do two things that he needed to do if he wanted to have any chance of winning the war, particularly of prevailing against the Russians. Number one was to put women to work. Because we found that in the United States, Rosie the Riveter was not just a fiction. There were many, many women, millions upon millions of women who manned those factories and built those ships and made that industry possible while the men were away at the front. Hitler wouldn't do it. Why? Because it was Nazi ideology that women should be devoted to Kinder, Kirche, and Küche, meaning children, the church, and the kitchen. And it was only at the very, very end of the war that some of that was changed. There was another commitment that Hitler made that ended up being disastrous for him and a great blessing, of course, for the rest of the world. Hitler refused to put the economy on a wartime footing. In other words, with the use of all the slave laborers, the idea was that the German economy would keep running on and providing people with consumer goods, the sorts of rationing and doing without that other countries, including the United States and Japan, dealt with, Germany wouldn't deal with. Now, Russia, by contrast, Hitler's archenemy, and remember, most of the fighting and certainly most of the dying in the war occurred between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. That sort of reminds me, of course, of Henry Kissinger's comment about the Iran-Iraq war. It's just too bad they both can't lose. Well, they both did lose plenty in terms of manpower. 10 million German casualties killed and wounded and missing and prisoners of war on the Russian front. 11 million Russians just killed in action. People say a total of 50 million Russians may have died. But one of the ways that Russia prevailed was Russia was able to build more tanks and more planes than Germany. How? They put women to work, they used slave labor ruthlessly, and they relocated their plants. They moved their plants away from the front. Russians even used women as beasts of burden. They used them to pull plows, they used them to move stuff. They had no shame about it at all, and it allowed them to prevail in the struggle against Nazism. More about myths and misunderstandings on World War II on this special broadcast.
Listening to a best of the Michael Medved show. For complete show archives, go to michaelmedved.com and consider becoming a Medhead. Use the promo code SPRING40 for some special discounts. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on.
Yes, the pandemic is coming to an end. Restrictions are coming to an end. But body aches and pains never seem to end. That's why you need to click sunny-bay.com for the best sleep you can get. Sunny Bay's legendary products can help, like our lavender stress-reducing products, locally sourced and handmade in the USA. Or try Sunny Bay's award-winning pillows for traveling or extra neck support while sleeping. No need for pills or expensive chiropractic visits. Our neck support pillows are that good. Sunny Bay is a homegrown small business, but our products are designed and rigorously tested based on your demand and feedback. And they make great gifts for mom, dad, or anyone. Find Sunny Bay products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, or at sunny-bay.com. And right now, get free heat patches and a belt with any purchase. So remember, Sunny Bay heating pads, neck pillows, and stress-relieving hot or cold wraps as restrictions come to an end and you get back to work. Do it the healthy way with Sunny Bay.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
This year's Memorial Day feels more normal as COVID-19 restrictions are loosened and the pandemic continues to wane. The Department of Veterans Affairs reminding Americans on this Memorial Day that over 12,000 veterans lost their lives in the battle with the coronavirus. President Biden honoring soldiers at Arlington National Cemetery. Biden, joined by Vice President Kamala Harris, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, and others, in laying a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. More states are getting 70% of their adults vaccinated against the coronavirus. The latest to join that group are California and Maryland. They're the 11th and 12th states to hit the mark. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com, keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203. Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com. And an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Join me, George Norrie, for Contact in the Desert Worldwide Virtual UFO Conference, June 25th to the 28th. Contact in the Desert will be an epic weekend of exploration into UFOs, ancient alien civilizations, consciousness, AI, crop circles, and cutting-edge science. More than 130 presentations, 67 speakers, and 2 extra weeks to view our extraordinary lineup. Get your tickets today at contactinthedesert.com. It's time to make contact. Contactinthedesert.com.
You're listening to the Michael Medved Show, but what you're hearing in the background, you might have heard if you were listening to Radio Berlin in 1939 or 1940, 41, 42. This music of Franz Liszt's Les Preludes was played by the Nazis to celebrate any new victory announcement. They'd interrupt the radio broadcast and come on with this sound. Plenty of victories to celebrate, of course, in the early years of the war. But some of this noise, this particular classical music, they used Franz Liszt, even though he wasn't German, he was Hungarian. I guess he counted as close enough because he was father-in-law of Richard Wagner, the Nazis' favorite composer. That was the kind of thing you would hear in Germany, where culture was very formal, of course, and they were very concerned about continuing high culture, continuing normal civilian life. They didn't make the kinds of sacrifices on the home front in Germany until the later stages of the war, after the Russians were pushing on the east and the Americans were, and the British were pushing on the west, and things began to collapse. Even so, they took time off to make a huge movie. Herr Goebbels wanted to make a German Gone with the Wind. He loved the movie Gone with the Wind, and he had a fascination with making a German version called Kohlberg. Unfortunately, it wasn't finished until the Germans had already just about lost the war and all the theaters had been bombed out. This contrasts the music of Les Preludes, played by the Berlin Philharmonic at the height of the war. That contrasts, of course, with the kind of music that Americans were listening to at the time.
When the Führer says, he is the master race, be heil, heil, right in the Führer's face, not to love the Führer, he's the great disgrace, so be heil, heil, right in the Führer's face. Wenn Herr Goebbels says, we own the world in space, he hired, right in Herr Goebbels' face.
This is the song stylings of Spike Jones. It was a gold record in September of 1942. It was originally written as a soundtrack, believe it or not, for a Disney cartoon called Donald Duck in Axis Land. The whole American idea of mobilizing popular culture, making fun of the Germans, the lighter feel of what you had going on in the United States of America, the clowning, the Heil, Heil, and that was called the Birdophone, played by someone named Willie Spicer, who didn't really exist. It really was Spike Jones. The idea that this became a smash hit, the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy of Company B became a smash hit, that Americans yearned for normal life. And this was a huge advantage in the war. One of the myths about World War II, which is what we're talking about on this special broadcast, one of the myths about World War II is that Americans were somehow representing a liberal force, whereas the Germans and Japanese were a conservative force. There was nothing conservative at all about the Germans and Japanese. They wanted to totally remake the world. The Germans to build up their Tausendjahre Reich, their Thousand-Year Reich. Look at the architecture that Albert Speer built in Berlin. It's almost science fiction stuff. And Hitler's whole vision of having conquered all of Europe and building an entire new world order was radical. It wasn't conservative, and the same was true for the Japanese, who wanted to conquer all of China and to remake the entire world to become the world's first Asian superpower and to dominate everything, and who hailed the emperor as a god. None of this was conservative. This was world-changing. The American desire was to get back to normal. And really, when you hear Roosevelt's rhetoric, the talk about the United Nations that came later, Roosevelt was very careful not to fall into the trap that Wilson had fallen into about creating a making the world safe for democracy or the war to end all war. The talk of Roosevelt and Churchill was to defend democracy, to keep things that existed. That's one of the misunderstandings about World War II, one of the mistakes about World War II. Another mistake is that the Germans ended up suffering because their troops were just mindless robots. It's not true. The German troops followed what was called the Führerprinzip, the Führer principle, the leader principle. But what that meant is that every single German troop was supposed to study and think about what two ranks above him would do, so he would be prepared to take over. It created a remarkable army. The home front betrayed them. Ultimately, the Führer betrayed them. He ended up fighting a war on two fronts, which he had promised never to do, and that brought him down. But did the Führer make a special target of sexual deviance? That's one of the myths about World War II. That and more coming up.
This is the Michael Medved Show.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. As the nation struggles with our legacy of racism and inequality, many well-intentioned Americans embrace lies about white privilege, the idea that people of European ancestry enjoy vast advantages based solely on their ongoing oppression of all people of color. But many measures of well-being contradict this simplistic theory. Most recent numbers show white life expectancy declining, while Asian American people can expect to live a full 8 years longer, and Latino children will live on average 4 years longer than whites. Suicide in America claims twice as many lives as murder, and white people have the highest suicide rates, almost double those of black people. The largest number of crime victims, welfare recipients, drug deaths, and most other measures of misery are white. This doesn't mean black families don't suffer from intolerable race-based inequalities that must be overcome, but it's no solution to focus on purported white privilege that actually doesn't exist. I'm Michael Medved. The special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, World War II, Myths, Mistakes, and Lies. Now it's time to talk about some of the lies and the most pernicious lies. Lies specifically about the Holocaust. The music in the background from a distinguished TV miniseries, The Winds of War, the music by Robert Cobert. If you do want to read a book, actually two books, that give a novelistic, outstanding account of World War II, check out The Winds of War and War and Remembrance, the companion volumes by Herman Woke. They are hugely readable and tremendously informative. One of the lies about the Holocaust that upsets me most, and I say that as the son of a mother who left Germany with her family in 1934, whose family, extended family, lost everything in the Holocaust. One of the lies about the Holocaust is that it was aimed at three groups you often will hear named today. You'll hear that Hitler went after Jews, gays, and gypsies. Okay, it's absolutely true that he went after Jews. He killed the majority of the European Jewish population, close to 6 million people, as everybody knows. It's also true that he went after gypsies. Nobody knows how many gypsies he killed, but it was a substantial portion of the gypsy population in Europe, probably as many as 500,000. He also killed some 5 million European Gentiles in the camps, 3 million Polish Catholics who died, civilians, in World War II. So tons and tons of people, but it is a lie to say that homosexuals were a particular target. Okay, this has been exposed very effectively in a book that needs attention. It's called The Pink Swastika, Homosexuality in the Nazi Party. Now, it's not that no gay people died in the Hitler camps. It's that no gay people were sent to the death camps for the crime of being gay. It is true that in some of the work camps, in some of the concentration camps, not the death camps, they had different triangles. They had different little patches of cloth that identified people. And it's true, they had a pink triangle. And they had people who they humiliated as homosexuals who were forced to wear the pink triangle. Most of them had been arrested for being communists or political agitators of one kind or another, for being common criminals, or were arrested for having sex in public places, molesting children, the kinds of crimes involving gay behavior that had been criminal before the Nazis came to power. The Nazis did not have a special focus on murdering gays. They did murder the disabled. They murdered between 80 and 100,000 people who were disabled in one way, many of them people who were mentally challenged. The Nazis murdered them. But the total, according to really the best investigation of this, the total camp population of gay prisoners was 15,000 over the course of the whole war, and maybe 50,000 prisoners total. But John Fouts, who's a professor of history, says that most of those gay prisoners, those 50,000, were people who were sent to regular prisons.
This is the Michael Medved Show.
Even for Americans who've been successful in dodging the coronavirus so far, there's still a problem of pain. There are 100 million Americans who suffer from ongoing pain due to overexertion or exercise or just aging or the effects of everyday living, and Relief Factor can help. It helps exercise-related pain or general muscle aches and pains, and it certainly does for me. There are four key ingredients. Each one approaches the body's natural anti-inflammatory response function from different metabolic pathways. The 3-week quick start can show you how it works. It's just $19.95, 95 cents a day, less than a cup of coffee a day, much less for pain relief. Try Relief Factor. It has worked wonderfully for literally hundreds of thousands, and certainly for me. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, and order your own quick start. Nothing to lose but your pain, the whole world to gain.
With new leadership in Washington, D.C., it's abundantly clear that Americans are deeply divided. What does our country even believe anymore? What do we have in common? One organization that continues to stand for what America has always believed is the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College. The Institute stands for the first things, the permanent things. Religious liberty, freedom of conscience, the family, limited government, free markets, our Judeo-Christian heritage. The Institute for Faith and Freedom is unafraid to support these timeless truths and principles with no apologies. Go to the website faithandfreedom.com and you'll see insightful, bold opinion pieces from the renowned faculty at Grove City College. See Mark Hendrickson's latest on GameStop, Wall Street, and the hedge fund managers. See John Sparks and former Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty on impeachment. And take a look at our friend Paul Kanger's articles and speeches. You can find all of this and much more at the website of the Institute for Faith and Freedom. That's www.faithandfreedom.com.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing. We've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with the high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. A study at England's University of Sussex warns those who snack while watching television or playing video games are more likely to overeat, greatly increasing risks of obesity. You're less likely to be able to tell how full you feel, Professor Martin Yeomans explained. You're more likely to keep snacking. This is important for anyone wanting to stay a healthy weight. Well, the conclusions of the study might seem obvious, but still convey an important message about the hours we lavish on screens, including our obsession with social media. Few people feel satisfied after just a few minutes of screen time. Social and entertainment media are deliberately designed to encourage you to keep watching, to keep clicking, to always yearn for more. Nothing in our screen engagement promotes feelings of contentment or fullness. Perpetual hunger characterizes most addictions, including our often thoughtless indulgence in all forms of media diversion. I'm Michael Medved.
You're listening to a best of the Michael Medved Show.
Then something else that's dishonest deals with the very end of the war. And you've all heard it, that America committed genocide by dropping the 2 bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that we actually dropped the bombs to try to scare away the Russians, that we did that because we were racist, we were bloodthirsty, we wanted to kill the Japanese. Look, this is all nonsense. The dropping of the bombs saved many American lives, probably hundreds of thousands. It also undoubtedly saved millions of Japanese lives. Japan was in terrible shape at the time of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The Japanese had lost 100,000 people in the firebombing of Tokyo. There were dogs running in the streets of Tokyo because people didn't have enough food to feed their dogs. People were running away to the countryside. These packs of wild dogs were often attacked by starving civilians who would kill the dogs and eat them. And there isn't that tradition of eating dog in Japan. It was a terrible time, but they weren't at all ready to surrender. As a matter of fact, we now know that Japan was fortifying and planning recently declassified material that was captured from the Japanese. Shows that they were planning a desperate stand. The estimate by the Army Medical Corps was that there would be at least 395,000 casualties from the U.S. alone for Operation Olympic, which would have been attacking the first of the home islands, Kyushu. The truth of the matter is, if you want to know how necessary it was to drop the bombs, what you need to understand is that even after the bombs were dropped and Hirohito, the emperor, decided to surrender, there were elements in the Japanese military who absolutely refused to go along with that surrender, who had a plan, a mad plan, of actually kidnapping the emperor to continue what they called the resistance. what actually happened? We'll tell you in this special broadcast about myths, mistakes, and lies on World War II. This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. During the period of home isolation, I've looked more deeply into messages in the traditional prayers I recite every morning. For instance, a key passage in ancient Jewish liturgy is the Yishtabach, or the God be praised prayer. It concludes by hailing, quote, the God of thanksgivings, Master of Wonders, who chooses melodious songs. Now, this should remind us that music, with its mysterious power to stir souls, is a divine gift, but also that not all music is created equal. We praise God not for creating music, humans do that, but for choosing the right songs. So what music would God choose? I'd assume heaven would select enduring achievements of the last 300 years, possessing depth and spirituality, rather than superficial yelps that may prove popular but fleeting. God's playlist more likely features Bach and Mozart over hip-hop or techno-pop. That meaningful choice could help all of us endure this devastating interruption in our lives. I'm Michael Medved. Minutes past the hour on this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show about myths, mistakes, and lies on World War II. Probably the most dangerous of all those myths is the idea that it was somehow genocide, it was irresponsible, it was evil for the United States to save lives, which is what it did, for us to drop bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The reason we dropped two bombs within 3 days of each other is we needed to convince the Japanese or make them believe that we actually had an unending supply of atom bombs to drop. Actually, those are the only two we had. We had built up the Manhattan Project at the cost of $2 billion, 125,000 Americans working on it, and that was all we had. We needed to make it count. And there was an attempt to save hundreds of thousands of American lives, undoubtedly millions of Japanese lives. In the course of World War II, there were 2 million killed-in-action deaths of the Japanese military, and only 150,000 wounded. Now, that's bizarre, because normally you have three times as many wounded as you have killed in action. But see, the Japanese believed in fighting to the death. They believed it was a dishonor to surrender at all, which is why they were so harsh to their prisoners of war. And why they absolutely refused to surrender even after the bombs went off, killing 70,000 people in Hiroshima and maybe as many as 40,000 in Nagasaki. On August 14th, they still had not formally surrendered, even though Emperor Hirohito decided they should. Hirohito called an imperial conference, the first since 1941 when war with the West was agreed upon, and he commanded weeping officials to accept the Potsdam terms. That was unconditional surrender. It was the most emotional event in the history of Japanese government. Yet even this was not enough to guarantee obedience. Early on the next day, a handful of junior officers demanded that the commandant of the Imperial Guards Division, which protected the emperor, joined them in seizing Hirohito and preventing any surrender. When the general refused, they killed him. And using forged orders, they took command of the guard and sealed off the palace. These young tigers had a whole plan to kidnap the emperor. He had already made a recording announcing the surrender. They wanted to seize the recording. Ultimately, even after this, there were 11 planes that disappeared on a kamikaze mission. This is after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. More than 1,000 officers came to the ruins of the Imperial Palace and killed themselves. This is, again, after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, with the palace running with blood for days after the surrender. There were elements in the Japanese military that, even after the atom bomb was dropped, refused to surrender. So the idea that somehow showing them a demonstration would have gotten them to surrender, somehow telling them we really have this weapon, it wouldn't have worked. Unfortunately, the death of the civilians at Hiroshima and Nagasaki saved the death of even more civilians, an even more tragic killing, an orgy of killing nonetheless, World War II. So important when we look back on it. We look back on it accurately and truthfully. in a style worthy of this greatest nation on God's green earth.
You're listening to a best of the Michael Medved Show. For complete show archives, go to michaelmedved.com and consider becoming a Medhead. Use the promo code SPRING40 for some special discounts. When you become a premium subscriber, you get access to hundreds of Michael's commentaries, movie reviews, exclusive podcasts, and of course our commercial-free radio show going back years and years. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead banner today.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. A new study of the aging process demolishes one of the chief leftist claims about health care, that government control can eliminate inequality. The research conducted by Harvard and University College London looked at more than 25,000 people over 50 in the U.S. and the U.K. In both countries, subjects with higher net worth enjoyed an identical advantage of 8 to 9 disability-free years compared to those with little or no personal wealth. The results shocked experts who expected that Britain's highly touted government-funded National Health Service would produce more equal outcomes than the United States. Data strongly suggests the real difference in health and longevity reflect common patterns in both countries, where the poor are far more likely to smoke, to consume unhealthy diets, to abuse drugs and alcohol, and shun regular exercise. In both America and Britain, health depends less on government programs than on lifestyle choices we can control. I'm Michael Medved.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
Maybe you haven't noticed, but the craft beer industry has become a powerhouse. And there's a wonderful new documentary about this fascinating subculture that should appeal even to those who don't think they love beer. It's called Brewmance, now available for rent on multiple streaming services. Cheers.
Take home brew. You put yourself into it. Your personality. Your love.
Having a passion for what you do, that's what carries you through.
And what carries this movie through is a focus on two brewery startups. One of them, a Christian father and son operation, and the other put together by three dropouts from the music industry. In addition, there's perspective from creators of some of the most famous craft beers out there. Altogether, filmmaker Christo Brock has brewed up an entertainment that's informative, even inspiring, about faith, family, and the entrepreneurial spirit. Even if you take just a sip, you'll want to drink deep. 3 stars for Brewmance.
If you want to get more movie reviews, go to michaelmedved.com, where you can also find a list of Michael's top 10 movies going back over the last 10 years. Thanks for listening to The Michael Medved Show in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
If Ernest Hemingway was alive today, would he say this to you?
Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe, all great writers. And after reading your book, I simply must add you to the list.
Wait, you don't have a book yet. So make a free call to Page Publishing. Their expert staff can help you turn your book idea into a real book, a masterpiece that could someday make the bestseller list in hard copy and digitally all across the world. Page Publishing can help you completely take your idea for a book, write it, and publish it. So if you want to join the ranks of some of the most famous authors in the world, call now for a free information kit. Turn your book idea into publishing gold. Make a free call right now to Page Publishing.
800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. 800-378-3212. That's 800-378-3212.
You've been hearing Dr. Wallach talking about 90 essential nutrients, keeping the body healthy. GCNteam.com now has Beyond Tangy Tangerine Tablets, 60 plant-derived minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, packed in a powerful tablet. But that's not it. 160,000 auric points, a knockout punch to free radicals. Call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com. That's 877-878-4203.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.